The Chase Down podcast presents A City of Champions, a seven-part series chronicling the Cavs 2016 NBA championship. With help from fans who cheered against us, reporters who covered it, and the players who watched it, we'll take you game by game through the most improbable 3-1 comeback in championship history. Be sure to subscribe to the Chase Down podcast to relive the greatest series we've seen in our lifetimes.
One dribble, steps back, puts up a three. Won't go. Rebound tip taken by Spates. Final seconds. It's over. It's over. Cleveland is a city of champions once again. The Cavaliers are NBA champions.
The series begins Thursday, April 9th.
All right, this podcast is brought to you by Bet Online, your online wagering solution. We're joined by Dan Favalli here today. We're going to talk about Rockets Lakers, a potential playoff preview if the playoffs happens, you know, which is still up in the air. But yeah, this was a fun one. I hope you guys enjoyed.
Blue Wire.
Russell Westbrook is off to Houston.
It's going to be scary. Not for us.
No! James Harden just caught a body here in Los Angeles.
And Westbrook is off the freeway.
What's up, guys? Welcome to the Juice Podcast. My name is Solomon Ali, at Solomon Ali NBA on Twitter. You're joined by Dan Favalli. He writes for Bleacher Report and is the host of the Hardwood Knox Podcast, part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network. How are you holding up, man?
I am doing well, especially relative to the circumstances. So I won't complain when so many people have it so much worse than I do. That's all I can really say. How about yourself?
So have you ever watched like a scary movie in theaters and like on the way out of the theater, everything around you becomes like a potential threat and you're just like rushing to your car and like the walk up to your front door is like the scariest thing in the world?
Yeah, been there.
Yeah, so that's the level of paranoia I'm experiencing right now with the coronavirus. Like, it's like every time I have to leave the house to accomplish like a small task, like I always have my face mask on me and I always have my hand sanitizer. And in my brain, everything around me, like every hard surface, every object, every person has coronavirus. And I know it's irrational. I know it's like I'm being paranoid, but it's just, it's in my head all the time.
It's also rational at this point too. And I'm not a very like... I'm pretty easygoing, except when it comes to work. Like, I'm very high strung and anxious when, I mean, you know, the industry that we're in. So like stuff like that gets me, but I'm normally pretty like calm, just about everything else. And I'm even paranoid with the coronavirus. And I think we probably need paranoia at this point to make sure that, the world, not even just the country, but the world at large is as safe as possible at this point.
Yeah, it's a problem with young people too, right? Because I have a younger brother and he just will not listen to any of the guidelines. Like, it's a good thing that the local government is stepping up and closing things down, because this guy would still go out if not for the guidelines they're putting in place. Like, it's one of those things where they do not understand like what they're... this isn't about them. It's about everybody else. It's like, even if you're... If you're not a high risk population, if you're someone who's just, you know, a pretty healthy person, not you don't have any autoimmune disorders or whatever, like you're affecting other people by playing this dangerous game.
Right. And it's I struggle to see how people just don't understand that or don't care about that. But it's even worse when it's not really just young people either. There are government officials that don't understand that. Cough, Georgia, cough. So like that's what's really alarming about all this.
Yeah, and I live in Texas, so like it's only a matter of time here, and it's scaring the hell out of me. But you know what? We're gonna power through it, and we're gonna get to this podcast. So I feel like what we're doing today is obviously we're continuing our potential playoff series. And I feel like the central question here to start with is pretty obvious. Do you think we'll have an NBA playoffs this year?
I really hate to be a pessimist, and I don't have any inside knowledge. It's just a gut feeling, and then, you know, you talk to people who are actually plugged in and might have just sensed pessimism as well. I would be a little bit surprised if we have an NBA season at this point. Maybe they really go full bore at some point and decide to play in a bubble where they have all the teams, just the playoff teams, come to one location or two locations, whatever it's going to end up being. But I think you and I discussed this briefly a couple weeks back. I would be fairly surprised at this point if we get a playoff in any form, really.
So up until 2 weeks ago, I was where you were at. I was on team, there's not going to be a playoffs this year. But then I conducted this straw poll, which included you and like 30 other people in and around the league. So NBA media, agents, players. And there seems to be a growing optimism that there will be a playoffs. And what I keep getting back is there's just too much financial incentive there. Like, the league is already hemorrhaging money. Like, they're just bleeding. And having a playoffs is the easiest way to minimize the salary cap hit. And so I still, you know, I'm still pretty pessimistic, but I think I now recognize the pretty heavy financial incentives there.
Yeah, and it's, I totally get that. And it wouldn't surprise me, especially if the NBA is willing to just wait as long as possible where, you know, if we need to have the finals in November or something, like if that's their timeline, then yeah, maybe they can force it or will it to happen. And one of the other things, and I'd been talking with an agent that I didn't really realize, is there's going to be a push from probably these teams that made these win now moves in the middle of the season. You look at, like, the Clippers might be a perfect example. I'm not saying Steve Ballmer would recklessly try and make sure games happen, but would you have given up as much as you did for Marcus Morris, who's going to be a free agent, when, if you knew that there was a good chance or even a possible chance that there wouldn't be the playoffs? And so there's, aside from money at stake, like, now you've actually burned assets that you can use to build out your team in the future to focus on winning now, when the now is actually in jeopardy.
Yeah, I've looked at all these playoff teams and I can't find one that would argue for postponing the playoffs. Like, all these teams have incentive. So, and including, like, you mentioned the win now moves from the general managers. Like, you're talking about the players. Like, players like Chris Paul, LeBron James, like, these guys are in the last years of their prime. And you're talking about incentive to finish it out strong. Like, there's plenty there. And you're looking at, obviously, the win now moves from the executives. And obviously, like, you're talking about the luxury tax implications of not having a playoffs this year. Like, some of these owners, and especially the team that I cover, they are not going to be happy about the hit that this is going to cause them. I mean, it's going to be lots and lots and lots of money. And you know, these executives, they plan for years on out, you know, and they include the luxury tax into their equation. And this has completely screwed all that up. Nobody saw this coming, and this is something they just now have to work around. They're already, like, Daryl Morey came out last week and talked about how they're already planning for the offseason. They're already planning for free agency. They're planning for trades. They're planning for all that stuff, draft, all that stuff right now, because nobody has any clue what's going to happen next.
Right, and I hope I'm wrong. I hope there is a playoffs, and that no matter how it happens, at least we have to assume that should the postseason take place, that circumstances have improved at least to some degree, to maybe where you can get to a point where it's safe or semi okay to, you know, even if it's isolate teams themselves and hold the playoffs in a central location. I guess at this point, though, it has to be, is it almost a given that the regular season is just done? Because even if you can squeeze in games, like, what is the incentive for Draymond Green to ever play again this year for a team like the Warriors? I just don't know how, even for a team like Portland, that might be the 9 seed, depending on how many games you can actually squeeze in, playing 5 or 6 regular season games actually isn't going to mean anything to them. And so, yeah, there's revenue involved there, but I don't know how you get the players, one, ready to play, but then up for those games that for close to half the league at that point, or even more if you're looking at certain playoff seed battles, those games are going to end up being less than meaningless.
Yeah, I talked about this with TJ McBride in terms of, like, the run-up. Like, if there is a run-up, it's going to be, like, 5 games. Like, I can't see it being any more than that because, I mean, you're talking about the kind of games they're going to have to play. Obviously, the possibility of fans, to me, that's out the window. Like, there's not going to be fans at any of these games if they start.
Right.
But it's strictly going to be a televised product. I don't know what classifies as essential personnel in that case. Like, is media going to be there? Like, is it just going to be the teams and the coaches? Are you know, the GMs going to be there? Or, like who classifies as someone who needs to be in that building? And how many can you have in a building? Like, what kind of guidelines are the CDC going to put in place, you know, for events like that? I don't know. Like, there's just so much uncertainty from the government on down to the NBA. Like, it's going to take at least another 2 weeks before we get any sort of clarity on when the league returns, much less if the league returns.
Yeah, and I, you know, from the numbers, like, if you look at, you mentioned, like, what a, you know, basketball operations part, even if that's what it's limited to, I would love to know what the average number of people would be deemed essential per team. Like, is it 50 per game or something like that? And then you have to deal with the possibility of, what if someone tests positive for the coronavirus during all this? Then you just automatically have to shut down all over again. And so I don't even know how you get to a point where you play without without fans in a singular location, unless testing is so. I know that teams have had access to it that regular citizens have not, but you actually really need to have, like, not just access, but those tests need to be, like, turned around in a few hours as well, so that you can deal with the possibility of, oh, if someone gets hit with this again, then you have to be prepared to shut everything down once more.
Yeah, I don't see a situation in which the league continues and everybody is not tested, because these asymptomatic carriers are, like, the real issue here, right? Because, like,
right.
We don't know. We still don't know who has coronavirus and who doesn't. And you'd have this whole bubble scenario that everybody keeps talking about. Like, you're talking about potentially testing hotel employees. You're talking about potentially testing, you know, everybody they've been in contact with. Like, you're talking about lots and lots of people having to be pretty much enclosed in their home and only attending work. It's so the logistics are so complicated that it's hard to envision. But that's the only way you could potentially make this go through is, like, having one centralized location. You know, perhaps in Las Vegas, perhaps in Los Angeles, wherever. Just one location, one hotel, only a certain amount of employees allowed to go into every room, and, you know, all the equipment they use, all that stuff has to be sanitized and rubbed down. Like, that's just so much to take into account here. And, you know, I don't know how the league's going to do it. It's going to be a real balancing act here. But I tend to think there's just too much incentive for them not to have it at this point.
Yeah, the logistics of, like, whatever it ends up being when you're talking about employees at a hotel or something, I would assume you're in the thousands then, maybe a couple thousand people. The logistics of essentially having to quarantine all those people is kind of absurd. But at the same time, I guess really the takeaway from this discussion is money tends to find a way, and there is a lot of money at stake. And so there might be a good chance I'm wrong, but I think maybe I'm just too pessimistic since we're now, you know, day 40 plus into life without sports. Maybe just pessimism has overtaken me fully.
No, listen, I was with you, man. Like, and the vaccinations, like, that to me is what just looms over everything, right? Like, we're a year and a half away from vaccinations being possible with this thing, and we still don't know if, you know, carriers of the coronavirus, like, that people that have had the coronavirus, excuse me, have antibodies. Like, we still haven't tested all those people. We don't know if these guys can combat or are immune to having coronavirus again. Like, that's still unknown. We just have to listen to Dr. Fauci at this point. Everything that man speaks has to be the Bible. Like, we just have to have him on television doing as many interviews as possible, because we need to get this information out. And I'm sure Adam Silver is doing everything he can to make sure he's putting in all the proper safety precautions. But it's hard not to wonder.
Yeah, and it's, you know, you look at the playoffs specifically, maybe they're sort of a good case study for how you go about next year. But then it's also difficult for me to even think about, you know, if we lost this season, yes, it would suck. But, like, I'm in my head, when you look at how far we are away from a vaccination, you're already talking about probably no fans at games to at least start next season, if not for the entire year, it feels like. And so I've already entered into mode of, are we going to have a next season? Like, if this season gets canceled, when are they going to be able to start back up again? Will they be able to start back up again? There's so much at stake, and there's so much we still don't know, even after dealing with this now for basically a, you know, I guess it really hasn't been in the public conscious, the national conscious, more than maybe a month and a half, but we're like 2 months into this or whatever, and there's just still so much we don't know, and there's still just so many hurdles in front of us, and that's why it's so tough to reconcile. I love talking about hoops because it's an escape, but it's so tough to reconcile or even guess what's going to happen just because we are so outside the know. It really just isn't even funny.
Yeah, and we didn't even get into the possibility of the players wanting a training camp, which is, like, just an entirely different discussion. Like, I don't even know if that's even a possible thing you could do. But that seems to be what all the medical personnel and all the team doctors, that's what they seem to want at this point. They want these players to prevent themselves from getting injured again and having some sort of training camp. You'd have to, for me, if there is going to be playoffs, like, every series has to be limited to, like, five games. Like, I don't see any way you have a full seven game series for, what is it, four playoff rounds? Like, there's just no way. Like, that's just
Maybe the finals, I guess, if even that.
Yeah, that's just too many games. It's too many people, and and we're talking about, again, all these employees that have to be involved. There's just too much to work out there. I think you'd have to get this in and out within a month, and at most. Like, normally the playoffs stretches into 2 months, but, like, there's no way you can get it done in 2 months in the normal fashion. Everything has to be, you know, tight in a very orderly fashion.
And depending on when it happens, if we're talking about, you know, late summer, early fall, we might get some ugly basketball. Two-week training camp isn't really going to help guys who haven't been able to play basketball at a real authentic level for, at that point, what are we talking about, 4 or 5 months or something like that? Because even when it's the off season, at least you have access to go to these public runs. You can have pickup games. I don't know now, you know, most of these places, depending on where you live, I guess, if you're forced to stay at home, and I'm sure teams, regardless of where players are located, are going to want them to stay at home. How many of these guys even have the room to practice dribbling? I'm sure just some of them are in their living room, because I'm sure it's a very small percentage that have actually home gyms. And so if we end up having a truncated playoffs where they have to take place in a month or 5 weeks or something, and it's 4 or 5 months after these guys last played basketball, we might be in for some truly ugly postseason play.
Yeah, only JJ Redick has it figured out. Like, I was listening to a podcast of his, and he talked about how he's going to this private facility where, like, everything's being sanitized. I'm like, man, this guy's like probably a top 20 percentile player in the NBA. Like, he's the only kind of player that'll have access to this kind of stuff. I don't see a player like Austin Rivers being able to, like, leave his apartment and going to a private facility and have access to his own, like, sanitized bath. Like, that's just not every player can do that. And, like, that's another hurdle, like, getting all these players in shape. But again, we're getting way far out. Assuming there is a playoffs, I think we're talking about Rockets Lakers as a probable third round series. I don't know how likely this is to happen. So I think a Rockets Lakers series would be really compelling, and I think it would be really fun, all the matchups and stuff. I think the Rockets have too many roadblocks on their way to the finals, considering especially if they freeze the standings and go into the playoffs. They're a 6 seed right now. They're going to have to play every single series on the road. They're going to have to play some really good teams in the Nuggets and the Clippers. I don't know. I think I have pretty good confidence against them, against the Nuggets, as it concerns the Rockets. I don't know how likely it is to get past the Clippers and play the Lakers.
You even look at that. Let's just say they made the finals. That road would be daunting to have to go through the Nuggets, Clippers, and Lakers. They're the top three teams in the West, so that matters. But they're also probably three of the most difficult matchups for them when you look at their roster. I just feel like the Clippers can play any way they want to. And so if they want to lean into micro ball the way the Rockets have, they technically could. And then the Lakers and Nuggets are probably, at least to me, the only real two teams who play bigger in the West that might be able to make Houston pay for the way that they play a little bit. And so to have to go through all three of them to just entertain making the finals is just absolutely bonkers.
It's going to be a bloodbath. It really is. Like, it's going to be one of those things where, like, if they get to a series with the Lakers, they're just going to be dog tired. Like, they're going to be playing a lot of basketball. Like, because you think all these series are going to go to at least, you know, 4 or 5 games. I mean, if we're talking about a truncated, you know, playoff schedule, like, they're going to play every single game. Like, they're going to have to play a bunch of games on their way to the Western Conference Finals. But I'm just going to assume, for this scenario, we're going to assume that they make it. They're in the Western Conference Finals. They're Rockets-Lakers. That's the matchup. Micro ball has dramatically affected the way I think about this series. So the sample size is pretty small, and I usually don't put too much weight into one game. But that February 7th matchup really influenced the way I look at this series, because it confirmed a lot of what I thought about it going in. Because, like, there are certain players on this Lakers team that just won't be able to play in a series against the Rockets. Like, Kyle Kuzma logged 20 minutes. JaVale McGee logged 16. Dwight logged 4 minutes. Rajon Rondo logged 15, and he was a negative 14. Like, in contrast, like, the Rockets played, like, their regular rotation without much adjusting. All the adjustments came from the Lakers end of things. Like, micro ball and the lack of depth is going to be a problem for this specific Lakers team.
Yeah, and the way they, even though I saw that game. It was, I think it was on trade deadline day. Was that February 6th when they played each other?
Yeah, and it might have been on trade deadline day or right after. Robert Covington played his first game, though.
Right, that's why I remember it, although it's almost 3 months ago at this point, too, so it's tough to remember. But what was actually telltale for me is the Rockets kind of, I won't say they let, but Anthony Davis was able to eat, and it never really sort of mattered. And so if that's your probably your biggest obstacle in this series. I know LeBron James exists, but it's you look at how they're going to play and who do you want on Anthony Davis a majority of the time, because PJ Tucker just he can't be on both AD and LeBron. It's just too much. And I don't know that Covington really stands up to either of those players. I've always thought he's better against he's a really good team defender, but he just seems like he's better against probably slider wings as opposed to bigs or just those bigger wings. And so that's probably still an issue. But it's like you mentioned, the depth that the Lakers have has probably outperformed expectations this year. But there are circumstances where a lot of these guys can be played off the floor. And you're looking specifically at, you know, you mentioned some of the players already, but you kind of have to wonder, like, yeah, Davis at the five is a solution and he's not going to be run off the floor defensively. But all these other guys, what are you going to do during the LeBron-less minutes where, you know, he'll be playing more time in the playoffs, but that still, those, what, 4 to 6, 7 minutes a game, they can shift an entire series. We saw it with Joel Embiid and the Sixers last year in the postseason was he was off the court. And I know that offense hasn't necessarily been the Lakers' problems when James is off the court, but that's even more scary because you're not going to get, when you're looking at Rondo, when you're looking at Kuzma and how many minutes they're going to have to play with Anthony Davis, it's hard enough to defend the Rockets as is when you're the Lakers and you have your best players on the floor around Davis at the five. But you think about even those just few minutes a game that LeBron will be off the court, they could really just end up falling into a massive hole. And so, yeah, they'd probably be the favorites just by virtue of their record and what they did during the regular season. But as far as matchups go, if you had to list them out of the potential matchups in the Western Conference Finals, I don't think the Rockets come close to being, you know, they might be the worst matchup for the Lakers at that point, aside from the Clippers.
No, I agree. Like, specifically all these centers, like, they just can't play. Like, JaVale, Dwight, like, Kuzma to some extent, like, all these bigs are just not going to be able to play. Like, I don't see a scenario where Frank Vogel doesn't start the series with Anthony Davis at the five. Like, you just can't play around here. Like, I any minutes you lose to the Rockets, like, just blowing you out like that, like, that's just going to cost you in the long run. You can't even afford to play games there. You have to start off with your best lineup, and I think the Lakers' best lineup has Anthony Davis at the five, as you mentioned. And, you know, all these non-shooters that the Lakers have, like, that's going to be a problem in a series where floor space is going to be a major issue. And, you know, obviously the Lakers have pretty decent defensive flexibility, I would say, like, top to bottom. They have a lot of quality defenders. But the type of defenders they have are just going to be a little less effective against the Rockets than they would in any other series.
Yeah, they're almost, a lot of them are single position defenders, and that's where you're going to run into issue with the Rockets, where there just really aren't positions outside of what Russell Westbrook does, I feel like, at this point. And then you sort of mentioned it with the three-point shooting. The Lakers are not just a good shooting team in the collective, but also, you know, the frequency with which they take threes. It's 24th. And so if you do fall down in a game, like, it might just be harder to claw back into it because you, one, don't have these certified shot makers from the outside, and then you're not really used to relying on that as much. And the Rockets will live with, you know, if you want to post up Anthony Davis, fine, they'll live with that. He's shooting, you know, 46% in the post this year, about. They'll be fine with that. Even if he shoots in the 50s, like, that's just something that they'll live with. And like you said, it was one game, but the fact that they were really able to give Anthony Davis his and then still kind of pull away so single-handedly, it would certainly be something to watch. And then you have to cake in the variance of in this playoff series, like, oh, these teams haven't played in a while, and so which team is going to be better suited to navigate that long sabbatical they've had. I'm not saying it will necessarily be the Rockets, but there's a chance that it could, just because I feel like their roster is probably deeper with players that fit a playoff rotation than the Lakers. And so that could end up being probably, that was probably a weird way to phrase it, but that could end up being a massive difference too, that you probably have to factor in for all these playoff series now. And you're looking at how long it's been since all these teams played.
With currently no NBA, NHL, or MLB, you might think there's nothing to bet on. Well, you'd be wrong. Arx, who's a partner, BetOnline still has hundreds of events, games, and props to wager on. From their online casino to poker and blackjack, they're bringing Vegas to you. Missing the NFL? No problem. BetOnline has live Madden NFL 20 simulations you can bet on. You can still bet on Survivor, Big Brother, American Idol, stock prices, and even Nathan's hot dog eating contest. All open 24 hours a day and all online. Use promo code BLUEWIRE, all caps, all one word, to join today and receive your new welcome bonus. Bet online, your online wagering solution. Yeah, I mean, like, I think the Rockets are going to play, like, their usual eight-man rotation. The Lakers might have to play, like, six or seven guys. Like, there's only, like, I'm looking at the lineups right now. I'm just like, yeah, this guy can't play. This guy can't play. This guy can't. So we're talking about, like, you know, trimming the rotation by, like, 25 to 30%. And that collective load that LeBron and Anthony Davis are going to have to take on, that's going to be a lot. That's going to bear on them in a series. And take the following sentence with the biggest grain of salt. So LeBron in this game, again, one game, big grain of salt. 18 points, 8 of 19 from the field, and just generally struggled. He had 15 assists, so that's obviously great, but he generally struggled against the type of defenders the Rockets have to throw at him. So they have PJ Tucker, they have Robert Covington. I think you'll see looks where Eric Gordon's guarding him. Like, they have just a bunch of, you know, obviously Daniel House. You'll see the Rockets have a bunch of switchable defenders to throw at LeBron. It's kind of unique for the Western Conference. I don't think I think the Clippers have a lot, obviously. But other than the Clippers, the Rockets are kind of uniquely situated to kind of throw multiple looks at LeBron. Now, over the course of a playoff series, that's not going to really matter because LeBron's going to be LeBron. But I think it will slow him down a little bit. And when you add on the fatigue he's going to take on, because guys like Dwight and JaVale just can't play, and he's going to have to take on more minutes at bigger positions, it could really take a load on him. And he might just be a less efficient player in this series.
Yeah, there's a chance. And we've seen that in the past, that teams, if LeBron, you know, his mindset is going to be to pass first anyway, but if you don't have guys who are hitting their outside shots, or he's in a position where he needs to be more of a scorer, we've seen him play more inefficiently than we're used to from him, and teams can beat his squads in those situations. And so it'll be interesting to see how far they would need to extend him in this series. You might quickly get to a point where it's, if Anthony Davis isn't on the court and LeBron is he your center now? It's I think probably the best way to put it would be, it's wildly unsettling how important someone like Markieff Morris could end up being in a series like this for the Lakers. And that might describe their rotation conundrums better than anything right now.
So who's the biggest X factor in this series for you? So for me, I have Robert Covington. So in this matchup against the Lakers, he had 14 points, 8 rebounds, 4 assists, 2 blocks, and he was 4-7 from 3-point range. Like, that's the kind of production the Rockets need from him to have a chance in this series, particularly the weak side shot blocking, which is a skill I didn't really know he had until he played bigger positions for the Rockets, and the rebounding. Like, those two things, like, he has to play big in order to have a chance against, like, he's obviously going to have to shoot good from beyond the arc, but that's, like, you know, that's too obvious. But the big man qualities, like, I think that's really got to stand out for him to be an X factor. And I think if he can play like that, the Rockets have a chance. But if he's not playing, you know, consistently having those weak side shot blocking opportunities and consistently, you know, putting up like 7 to 10 rebounds a game, they're toast. They're completely screwed.
Yeah, he might be my pick as well. I might leave it more open-ended, where I'm looking at, when you look at the Rockets roster, and just because there's only been that one game sample size, who's the player that ends up guarding Anthony Davis the most in this series? Is it Robert Covington? Is it, you know, do they change the way that, like you said, they'll throw a bunch of different people at LeBron? So is it possible that PJ Tucker ends up seeing the most time on him? Is it Daniel House? I might turn to just default to that person, because if there is going to be a problem for the Rockets, I would think it's because Anthony Davis just does some serious damage throughout the series, because they don't have a means of stopping him. And if, you know, they're a team, because they shoot so many threes, it definitely works, but that high variance has to be baked in. And so if you catch one or two bad games, particularly if this ends up being a best of five series, letting up big detonations from Anthony Davis could end up being just huge when looking at the potential outcome of the series. So I'd just be curious, and you could, I'm assuming, can answer this better than I could, but who ends up spending the most time guarding Anthony Davis for this Houston team?
So I have a question for you. What if the Rockets just lean into all their strong qualities and just go, screw it, we're going to have James Harden guard Anthony Davis for the series? Like, what if they lean into, he's an awesome post defender. That's obviously the skill we tout all the time to the media. We're going to have him guard him for the majority of the series. Obviously not full time, But I mean, I'm looking at the rest of the players on this Lakers roster. I don't see a better matchup for James Harden to be guarding other than Anthony. Like, I think you just go full bore with it. Like, I think you utilize it to the maximum. And I think, you know, I don't know how effective it will be, but I talked about this in the Nuggets playoff preview. I think he's going to guard Jokic. I really do. I think the Rockets are going to, like, if when they made this trade, they made a bunch of sacrifices in the way they guard players. I think James Harden's going to be a player that they use uniquely defensively throughout the course of the playoffs, throughout the course of the playoffs. And I'm not sure if people expect that, but it'd be interesting to see if the Rockets try that out in game one and decide, you know what, this is a look we really like, and we're going to stick with it for the entire series.
It does make sense, because if having James Harden on Anthony Davis tempts the Lakers into really milking Anthony Davis in the post, like, you're winning if the Lakers resort to Anthony Davis post-ups. Like, that's how I look at it. I'd just be worried about, especially if he's already defended Jokic in a previous series, the beatdown that he's still going to take defensively, where these guys might go up after their own shots and just them. You know, Anthony Davis doesn't have this, like, huge body, but he's bigger and he's springy, and that's going to take a lot out of him. And so you're already dealing with someone who carries this obscenely heavy offensive workload, and so you're putting a lot of trust in him to be able to carry that both ways, or at least to say, hey, Russell Westbrook can really end up leading us for long stretches on offense. And so that would have to be a calculated gamble, but that is definitely an interesting way to frame it.
I mean, that's a great point. The exhaustion the Rockets are going to have throughout the course of a playoffs. I mean, just playing this style in general takes a lot. Like, PJ Tucker is going to be gassed by the time they get to the Western Conference Finals. But I think that's just something that, like in order to maximize their roster strength, I just think that's something the Rockets calculated when they made that trade for Robert Covington. When they traded Clint Capella, I think they made that calculation internally. Like, we're just going to have to play with, like, 150% effort in every single game, and all our small guys are going to have to guard bigs, and we're just going to have to play bigger than what we actually are as a unit in order to maximize our strengths on offense, which is obviously the whole point of the trade, right? They made this trade so James Harden and Russell Westbrook could thrive. The last matchup against the Lakers, Westbrook had 41 points, 8 rebounds, 5 assists. He obviously thrives in this microball ecosystem, and I think, as you mentioned, putting a more of an onus on Westbrook might be something the Rockets go for as a sacrifice to putting Harden on Anthony Davis. You know, it's just a theory. You know, it's possible the Rockets just play it safe and have PJ Tucker guard Anthony Davis for the course of a series, but I think that's an interesting matchup that I really want to see. Like, if there's a run up to the playoffs, I want to see how the league restructures their schedule, and if there's any matchup against the Lakers, I really want to see how the Rockets play the Lakers in just a one game matchup. I want to see if they try it out, because obviously at the end of the season, all you have left is experimentation. So if the Rockets want to try James Harden on bigs for the rest of the season, that might be something interesting to watch.
It is kind of wild that if there isn't a regular season and they still default to having Harden defend bigs, that their path to the finals would have to include getting past the two teams that are best built to challenge that, with Jokic and Denver, and then having Anthony Davis on the Lakers. I would think but the safe assumption would have to be, just because you laid it out, like, that would they have to go to it at some point regardless of what happens. Maybe it's not a crutch that they use defensively, but just looking at the way they're built, I feel like that's something that has to happen at least somewhat frequently over the course of a whatever game series against the Lakers.
Yeah, I don't see a series in which Harden isn't guarding Anthony Davis for at least like 5 minutes a game. I don't see a scenario where that doesn't happen, because Mike D'Antoni's just such an experimentation kind of coach. He's going to try that, and the Rockets already know internally that Harden's good at guarding this kind of a play. And as you mentioned earlier, the point per possession give up that the Rockets are giving with Anthony Davis in the post, as opposed to LeBron James running a pick and roll, like, they'll take that any day of the week. They'll take that trade off any day of the week if the Lakers are going to continually feed Anthony Davis. And even if he's relatively successful against James Harden, that's just such a less efficient play than having, you know, obviously LeBron in a space floor and pick and roll situations. I think the Rockets would take that. And obviously this is a mathematically driven organization. They look at this kind of stuff. I wonder if you know, the front office goes to Mike D'Antoni before the series and say, if they want to feed Anthony Davis, let them. We'll win in the end in the points per possession battle if they try that.
If they end up not, though, for some reason, like, what would be the – you just default then to P.J. Tucker on Anthony Davis? Do they get weird and try and, like, get by with – you know, is Jeff Green even still on this team? It's been so long since I've watched basketball. Like, do you go like that far off the rails? I it's so in my mind. It's just so now that you've talked about the Harden guarding Anthony Davis, it's just so tough for me to find something that seems like a viable alternative that you don't end up sacrificing what could happen with LeBron, because I know there's not, you're not going to stop him. You're probably not even really going to slow him. You said you have a ton of different bodies to throw at him, but I would think that I feel if I'm the Rockets, a lot better about this series if, when all said and done, not knowing the outcome, but you can say P.J. Tucker ended up being LeBron James's primary defender. I would think that that's the situation that you want to get to.
I think that's what they're going to do. I think they're going to start games with P.J. Tucker and LeBron. And as far as who ends up ending the game guarding Anthony Davis, if you're going with the safe pick, I guess it's Robert Covington. But if you're going with, like, if you're going with the math, if you're going to play the math game, I you would guess it might be James Harden. It's just something I would try if I were them. At the very least, I would try that. And, you know, in my heart of hearts, I think they should do that. And if I'm going to lean into this strategy, I'm going to maximize every single advantage I have, and that's an advantage I have, so I'm going to do it.
Right, and I mean, even if it ends up being a complete flop for some reason, there's still the scenario where you're just out in front so much on offense that it doesn't even matter. And so, like, I know this is kind of a crude way of looking at things, but the Rockets make almost 15 threes per 100 possessions, where you compare that to the Lakers and they're at 11. And so that's like, you can go into a game, like, let's say with a like plus 9 points right off the bat, because let's say, you know, you're going to make at least three more three pointers than the Lakers. And so that does give you some margin for error to not just experiment defensively, but actually fail defensively, particularly if it's not wide open threes that you're giving up. And even if it is, you don't know, depending on what lineup the Lakers run out, you can't say for sure that, hey, they have the shooters that you can guarantee are going to knock down those looks, because who's their, aside from Danny Green, who's their second most trustworthy shooter? I feel like it's probably Kentavious Caldwell-Pope at this point, and that can't really be, like, maybe it's LeBron by default, and look, that's fine. But then, you know, after him, you're still going to get into, you know, KCP, if he's going to be considered your second best or your second most trustworthy shooter. Or maybe do you get to a point, because we've seen Danny Green go cold in the playoffs before, both the Raptors and Spurs fans know what I'm talking about, where if KCP is supposed to be your money shooter, that's not exactly the most ideal position to find yourself in.
Yeah, and in free agency this summer, I was just racking my brain against the wall, like, looking at this roster construction for the Lakers. I don't know how they have 49 wins. Like, it's just, they're obviously an awesome NBA team, and you have to give them the credit for what they've done this season, but their roster construction is just so goofy. Like, I keep looking at it, and I'm like, this is just a weird roster. Like, what NBA team is playing a center like Anthony Davis at power forward in today's game? Like, that just doesn't happen. He's playing center on 29 other teams. It's very strange, but the Lakers have found defensive success that way, so I guess you can't question the madness. But, yeah, I mean, against a team like the Rockets, that kind of advantage is really downplayed. It's turned into a negative. It's turned against you. Here's what I'll say. Frank Vogel, and I know it's been a while, he is a pretty creative playoff coach. I've seen him do some stuff for the Pacers in the Eastern Conference and really push teams that those Pacers teams weren't meant to push. So I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt in that they'll find creative solutions around all this. And obviously, you know, they came this far. They won 49 games. He obviously knows what the hell he's doing. So I think they'll figure some stuff out around the edges. But I think what you mentioned off the onset, like, yeah, I think the Rockets are going to go into the game with some sort of edge because of the way they play basketball as compared to the way the Lakers play basketball. I think that's a real calculation you have to put into this.
Yeah, and it's, you know, do the Lakers lean into it, like, try and match the way the Rockets play when Anthony Davis is off the court? You know, honestly, who is their center in those minutes? Do you try it with Kyle Kuzma, even though he's probably better off defensively? You know, maybe it doesn't matter against the Rockets because you're talking about P.J. Tucker as their center for some of those minutes, but Kyle Kuzma has always been a little bit better off defending the smaller players, and P.J. Tucker is just really strong and a money three-point shooter. I guess it helps that you know he's not going to put the ball on the floor, but who is your backup center in this series. And that, so that's a question you have to answer. Even if you get to a point where you're surviving, adequately surviving or thriving during the Anthony Davis minutes, it's, you have to figure out where the rest of those minutes at the five are going. And maybe that only ends up being 8 to 10 minutes a game, but that's a lot. And my guess would be at this point, it's probably a Markieff Morris in this series. And that's probably, you know, you look at the front court of Davis, LeBron, and Markieff Morris, that might end up being a trio where they haven't really played too much together. They haven't had the time to, but they really weren't on the floor together all that much relative to the opportunities they had. That might end up being just a super important front court combination for them when you look at how the Rockets play and how they're built.
Yeah, so that leads me into an important question. I think the answer here is pretty obvious. The most important stat in this series, in your opinion, why? And to me, I think the obvious answer here is actually the correct answer. It's rebounding, right? Like, the Rockets only lost the rebounding battle by one in that February matchup, and they limited the Lakers to 6 offensive rebounds. Like, you would think the Lakers would have much more than that against a team like this, right? Because they have such a huge size advantage. You would think they would pound that rebound, that offensive glass, in order to make up for what they don't have on the perimeter and, you know, try to make up that point differential, but they didn't in this game. Obviously, it's only one game, but the Rockets are not going to win that matchup over the course of a 7-game series. But if they can keep that as close as they possibly can, if they can, you know, lose rebounding battles by like 2-3 at most, then they're in it, right? Like, then you're talking about a perimeter-based game in which the Rockets come out on top.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. I'm sure there's an argument to be made that, you know, the most important stat might also just be the made three-pointers, because it seems like...
Oh, it might be. Yeah, it might be, yeah.
Just because, yes, the Rockets take so many, so you have that variance there, but the Lakers are such a... You know, you look at their offense, and, like, yeah, maybe they've outperformed expectations on defense a little bit, but you just kind of look at the types of shots that they take on offense, and it's like, how is this team sixth in offensive rating? Like, it does. I know they have LeBron, but it doesn't make all that sense. And then they've actually had a pretty good offense when LeBron is off the court. It's been the defense that's the problem during those stretches. And so that's why I might gravitate towards three-point makes a little bit. But I think it just looking at rebounds and second chance opportunities specifically for the Lakers, then what, you know, let's say they do get a ton of second chance opportunities, like, what are those turning into? Like, are we assuming that they're just putbacks, or, you know, guys are going right back up, or are they able to kick out for threes when Houston's defense is kind of scrambled? So that might matter as well. So I think you could probably go either way, but rebounding certainly seems like a good choice, because there's a discrepancy between the way the Rockets play and every team plays right now, basically, but there's a huge chasm between how the Rockets play and then how the Lakers play.
You know, we've talked about 1990s basketball going up against a modern day game for years, right? This is a conversation we've had about the NBA for the past, like, since 2014, since that Spurs team that really pushed the Heat and won that title up. Like, we've talked about that kind of basketball matchup forever. And this might be a case where we might just see it, like, unfold before our very eyes, like 1990s basketball versus a 2020 offense and a 2020 defense. Like, the Rockets defensively are modern too, because they switch everything, and the Lakers play a very conventional style of defense, and the Rockets obviously offensively they space the floor out, they don't run a ton of pick and roll. Like they're even more modern in that sense, in that they isolate on every single possession. They're beyond the point of playing pick and roll basketball, because they've realized that pick and roll basketball is just easier to defend than straight up one-on-one isolation with James Harden in a space floor.
So the extreme to which they take it, though, makes me, is it even modern? It might even just be anomalous at this point too, which makes the series even that much more intriguing. And maybe the one counter against that would be, like, the Lakers probably aren't as traditional when they have Anthony Davis at the five, which I know they've gone to increasingly later on in the season, but it is, they are used to for stretches at a time playing with two bigs. And so they're either going to be pulled somewhat out of their element, if not way out of their element, or, you know, maybe they're able to sort of just, the way they play is able to counteract what the Rockets do a little bit. So it is, that's, looking at this matchup, maybe we get a little bit of an answer when you look at the Nuggets, a Rocket series that would perhaps have to take place unless Denver ends up crapping the bed in the first round. It is the first round matchup against the Rockets, excuse me. So maybe we get an answer during a series like that. But yeah, it certainly seems like we would get everything we've wanted to know about the Rockets and whether this style can last and win at the highest level. It seems like the Lakers might be the perfect opponent in terms of the ultimate test. Like, what happens with this series, if it's close or if they actually win, that's probably just the consummate vote of confidence that the Rockets would need to continue building their team this way moving forward.
I mean, this is like the greatest first take series, right? Like you just imagine that, like, people arguing about this series for days. But yeah, I mean, I 100% agree. So defensively, I actually think the Lakers have some pretty decent options against Harden one-on-one. I think, you know, Danny Green's been shown himself to be a pretty competent James Harden defender over the years. I think you can throw Avery Bradley at him. I think you can throw, you know, for some stretches, I'm not sure if you want to throw him out for many minutes, but like KCP might see some time against Harden. The problem is, if you throw your best defender up against Harden, that secondary option to guard Westbrook is pretty barren. Because like you're talking about, I mean, like, okay, so let's just say the Lakers throw out a lineup of LeBron, Anthony Davis, JaVale, Avery Bradley, Danny Green, right? Like, so obviously Danny Green is going to guard Harden. So who guards Westbrook? Is that going to be Avery Bradley? Like, how well does he fare in a matchup against Westbrook? Like, Avery Bradley of 2 or 3 years ago, for sure, I 100% trust him against Westbrook. Avery Bradley of 2020, like, you know, we've talked about the statistical stuff with Avery Bradley for years, right? Like, that's just, it's just a weird black box that I feel even more comfortable discussing. But, like, against Russell Westbrook in 2020, that matchup is a little shaky. But I do like what the Lakers have to throw up against Harden.
Yeah, for Harden, yes. I do wonder if the Lakers might consider doing what the Jazz did with Rudy Gobert on Westbrook, but using Anthony Davis instead, because
interesting.
He ends up being someone that, where it doesn't end up being as big of a mismatch, just because you look at the way he moves his feet, and it's, you know, Rudy Gobert is just really coordinated himself, but Anthony Davis's length is just more, it feels more functional, like fluid, particularly when you're dragging him away from the basket. And so if you look at that, I don't know that you actually run into, because the Rockets aren't going to have true size on the court, you probably don't run into really matchup issues elsewhere at that point, unless, you know, is Russell Westbrook able to get by him anyway, just because he has so much of a runway? Is he, you know, he's been hitting his threes at a fairly high clip since Capella was last in the rotation. And so if he's hitting outside shots, then you have to probably look at changing up the matchup. But I would wonder if the Lakers might go that route, where they're mirroring what the Jazz did with Rudy Gobert, except that it actually kind of works, because Anthony Davis is the more, I would probably say, the more portable big in that scenario.
No, I you've convinced me. I think it is Anthony Davis. Like, who else does Anthony Davis guard PJ Tucker out there on the perimeter? Like, no, I think the obvious answer might be just he guards Westbrook.
Yeah, maybe that is obvious. I didn't even really think about that. And who would have thought, you know, that is definitely like a 2020 matchup, is Anthony Davis versus Russell Westbrook.
It is, right? It is just such an interesting series. Like they're just so diametrically different. Like, you can't find two more different teams in the NBA than the Rockets and the Lakers. You know, maybe the Bucks to some extent are pretty similar to the Lakers, but they have much more depth and they can play more versatile than the Lakers can defensively. But yeah, I mean, it seems to me that if I were Frank Vogel, I would at least, you know, to start the game, I would at least try Anthony Davis guarding Westbrook. It'd be interesting to see if the Nuggets try Jokic against Westbrook to start in round
that
one.
There's no way that ends well. I'd be shocked if that ended well for Denver.
Well, sure, but I would at least try it. You know, just try it out for 2 or 3 minutes, and if that ends up working well for the Nuggets, then there's no doubt in my mind that in the Western Conference, the Lakers throw that with Anthony Davis. Because as Anthony Davis is obviously, as you said, more portable than Rudy Gobert. He is infinitely more portable than Nikola Jokic. Yeah, I mean, I agree. Like, matchup-wise, it is really interesting the way these guys are going to cross-match positionally. Probably more than any other series in the playoffs, you're going to see a lot more cross-matching here. Let's end on this. Who wins this series and in how many games? So it's interesting. I feel almost as good about the Rockets in this matchup than any other series. The transition to micro ball has boosted my confidence in them against the Lakers. Before then, I really didn't trust them against the Lakers. I thought the Lakers were just better because the Rockets were playing a traditional style of basketball, and I thought the Lakers played traditional basketball way better than the Rockets.
Right.
The only thing I question is, could they even reach the Western Conference Finals? I think the Clippers are a pretty good bet to eliminate the Rockets before they get to that point. Because I think they, versatility-wise, defensively, the Clippers are as versatile as any team in the NBA. Like the Lakers are really good defensively, but they're not versatile. The Clippers are versatile. They can throw a bunch of different bodies at both Westbrook and Harden and play micro ball almost better than the Rockets. I mean, probably better than the Rockets. And that's my only question. If they can even get to the conference finals, I think if it's Rockets, Lakers in the Western Conference, I might just pick the Rockets. Like, I might pick the Rockets in seven games. And I know that's betting that the Rockets win on the road. But I don't see this being a seven game. I don't see this being a six game series. Like, in my head, I can't see this series ending in six and the Rockets coming out on top. I think if it ends in seven, the Rockets end up on top, I would say.
I almost want to see this series more than a Clippers Lakers, and not almost. I think I do, just because it feels like there are more questions that would be fun to answer. And I also kind of have the Clippers in a seven game series based off the, you know, them defending Anthony Davis could really be a problem for them. But it feels like that's a series that could end a lot more quickly than people realize. And so Rockets Lakers would be more entertaining to me. I would probably go Lakers in seven. And there's, I think, a few things I just default to. And so you touched upon already is that if the Rockets get to the Western Conference Finals at all, you look at the two teams they've gone through, I'd be shocked if,
yeah,
you know, if it's
cast. Yeah.
Yeah. If they're going through five game series, I'll be shocked if there's a series that lasted less than five games in that scenario then. And then also, is Russell Westbrook the way he's playing now? I know it's bizarre that we've taken this long to get to a point with Russell Westbrook that he's actually surrounded by shooting. The fact that it never really happened in Oklahoma City is just still wild. But if you can get him to maybe not finish all of his drives and he sort of reverts back to some of that pull-up stuff, I could see that being sort of a huge swing card in the wrong direction for Houston. And then the other thing is, while the Rockets are, I do think, built to beat the Lakers, even when they have Anthony Davis at the five, I'm still of the mind that the Lakers are at their best when Anthony Davis is your full-time five. And so you're inviting or forcing the Lakers to play as the best version of themselves in this series. And that's why I probably just, in the end, when you look at everything else that comes into play here, I would still tilt towards the Lakers. But it doesn't feel like a series, like you said, if we're talking five or seven games, it feels like one that would go the distance, however long that ends up being.
No, I think it's fair. Like, I mean, they've been the better team all season. Like, it's only right that the Lakers are the heavy favorite. Like, I think going into, if this series were to happen, like, the Lakers would be a heavy, heavy favorite in terms of the Vegas line. But yeah, I mean, I personally, the matchup to me is really, it hurts the Lakers more than any other team in the NBA. And it feels weird to be this confident against a 49 win Lakers team, to me, this Lakers team, I've always had problems with their roster construction going back to the summer, as I talked about earlier, and in this matchup it really hurts them. The way they goofily set up their roster around LeBron, and you know, it's a credit to Frank Vogel that he's made it work to this mm-hmm. point, but the depth issues to me will really come back to bite them in the end. But yeah, I think it's pretty fair either way, whether or not you pick the Rockets or Lakers. I really think it might be a coin flip series when it comes down to it.
Yeah, and what's really tough to reconcile too is the Lakers have so many obvious holes, and they're a better built team than they were last year. But that's not really a compliment. But the fact that they've won so many games and been as good as they have been during the regular season, like, it almost feels like when I'm nitpicking over what seems to be wrong with them, it almost feels wrong for me on my end, because it's like, well, they've been the second best team in the league. And, yeah, you know, there was a chance with the Bucks kind of fading a little bit. Like, could they have technically finished with the best regular season record? And then you really just can't ignore that. But the Rockets are definitely set up to give them more problems in the West than any other team besides the Clippers. And I don't think that's even a real question at this point.
No, I 100% agree. And It's kind of weird how Frank Vogel hasn't gotten more Coach of the Year buzz for what he's done with this team. Like, I really do think it's probably one of the more impressive coaching jobs in the NBA this season. And it just hasn't gotten much attention, because, like, I guess a lot of people just assumed this Lakers team would be good, but I had serious doubts. And they finished a lot better than anybody, I think, thought they would be. I mean, did you think the Lakers would be the number one team in the Western Conference before the season started?
No, I thought they'd be, like, Like maybe they could contend for two, but I kind of had them in that 3-4-5 range. And you almost, like, forget about the basketball. The fact that there hasn't been a mutiny in Los Angeles, Frank Vogel deserves a ton of credit for that. You have LeBron's teams are inherently dramatic. Like, there are always those rumors that leak out. And we're not talking last year's level when Anthony Davis was just so obviously going ahead of the Lakers at some point. But you look at those Cleveland teams, those four seasons, there were always just these crazy trade rumors. And so you expect that. And the Lakers never really had that this year, aside from the Kyle Kuzma stuff. But it never felt like that was an actual a rift in the locker room or anything. You also have Dwight Howard. You have Rondo. And just have nothing go wrong. Like, to have Dwight
Jason
Howard have
Kidd?
This. Yeah, Jason Kidd's. You have, first of all, you have like 8 head coaches on your coaching staff. And the fact that there wasn't any like backstabbing being reported about, they were too good for it to happen. But that's the other thing, is they were working with a razor-thin margin for error, or at least he was. Maybe he doesn't get fired this season, but there certainly would have been rumors had the Lakers stumbled at any point because Jason Kidd was there. And not only is he someone you know wants to be a head coach, he interviewed for the job that Frank Vogel has. And so there's just so many things that could have gone wrong, or it seemed like would eventually go wrong for the Lakers this year. And right down to the way they've played on the court, the fact that that stuff hasn't really reared its head in any form. I think Kyle Kuzma, you know, we talk about their depth issues, but their bench overall has been pretty good this year. Just when you look at the numbers and what they need, when you look at how deep their rotations are going, their biggest issue has probably been, you know, Kyle Kuzma's not the player that we maybe thought that that he was going to be, but that they need him to be for this team. And so that's obviously a concern, but if that's your biggest problem, knowing all else that could have gone wrong, that's a heck of a job done by everyone involved. But yeah, maybe Nick Nurse has just kind of cannibalized too much of the attention, but it certainly seems like Vogel should probably be at least top 3 on that coach of the year ballot.
Yeah, Lionel Hollins is an assistant coach on this team. Like, there's just so much there. Like, there's just so much there. Like, you're right. Like, the fact that there wasn't any sort of sign of a mutiny in this locker room is really impressive. And you just get the sense that LeBron respects Vogel, in a sense that like he's playing the best defense he's ever had since 2013. Like, mm-hmm. It's really impressive the way he's played for Vogel, in a way that he hasn't played for, you know, Ty Lue or, you know, Spoelstra at the end of that tenure. Like, it's to me, that to me is like the biggest, like, to get your players to buy in defensively to this extent. Like, that to me is like the biggest quality of a really, really good head coach, getting your players to buy in on that end of the floor. But yeah, this was fun. It was fun talking about basketball for a minute and not the impending doom of our planet. You know, that to me is always a good day.
Yeah, no, same here. Hoops is still a great escape.
Yeah, for sure. Where can we follow you on Twitter and read your work?
It's just my name is my handle on Twitter, at Dan Favale, Favale. And I write for Bleacher Report over there full time. So if you want to see my stuff, you can obviously follow me on Twitter or just search my name, and my page at Bleacher Report will come up, and you can read all of my mediocre to sub-mediocre articles over there.
Well, this was fun, Dan. Thanks for, thanks you so much for coming on.
No problem. Thank you for having me.